Hello everyone and welcome to Orbital, the Gadgets 360 podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about two important things, one of which is the Jiophone 2, which is a successor to the feature phone launched by an Indian telecom operator called Reliance Jio. And secondly, we are going to be talking about the Asus Zenfone 5Z, which is a competitor to OnePlus 6, a phone that claims to take on the flagship smartphones in the market at maybe, what, two-thirds the price. So to talk about these interesting things, we have our games editor, Rishi Alwani, who's also our resident Reliance Jio expert.
Debatable, but hi.
Yeah, and we have our Asus Zenfone 5Z expert on the house. That's Aditya Shenoy.
Hello.
Yeah, so first of all, before we begin this episode, there's a small, or rather, you know, large disclaimer, is that the Jiophone 2 was announced on the day of we are recording this podcast, which is the 5th of July. So we haven't really seen the phone just yet. And whatever we are saying about the Jiophone and anything about Reliance Jio is based on the presentation that Reliance made and the details that emerged subsequently. There is no product experience involved in that. But whatever we say about the Asus Zenfone 5Z is based on actual real-world product usage. We've been reviewing the phone and we have been using it for over a week now. So first up, I think we should talk about the Jiophone 2, which is probably the biggest announcement of the day. The Jiophone 2 is the successor to the Jiophone, as I mentioned earlier. Now, the Jiophone was a feature phone running KaiOS, so it is a smart 4G feature phone, as we, you know, can call it. And the speciality of that phone was that it was effectively free, which means that, you know, the cost of the phone was 1500 rupees, which was a completely refundable security deposit if you managed to keep the phone with you for 3 years. Now, the Jiophone 2 is not effectively free. It's a phone that looks a bit like Nokia Asha or BlackBerry phones of, you know, I don't know, 2008, 2009, I guess. And the important feature of the smartphone is that it runs KaiOS, and we got a big new announcement from Reliance is that the price is 2,999 and KaiOS now supports YouTube, Facebook and WhatsApp, which are probably the three most used apps in India. So Rishi, what do you make of the Jiophone 2?
I mean, now, here's the thing. It says it's Jiophone 2, but it's essentially just a Jiophone with the same spec. The design is slightly different, obviously, to make room for a keyboard that's similar to what you have on BlackBerries. But it's not exactly a major step forward. You still have the same 1.2 gigahertz Spreadtrum processor. You still have half a gig of RAM. You still have storage expandable up to 128 gigabytes. The screen's a little bigger, but the cameras are the same. The build quality, we're guessing, should be similar. So I think they should have just called it Jiophone Plus or Jiophone Pro instead of Jiophone 2, because it seems a little misleading here. The only differences seem to be superficial. We don't know if there would be any differences in terms of the software it's going to run. What we do know, however, is that it will be coming with, it'll have a version of KaiOS that has YouTube and WhatsApp out of the box. So safe to say, but that's also coming to the Jiophone in an update as well. So fact of the matter is, you're not really getting much new, in my personal opinion.
And you're paying twice the price.
Yep.
Of the Jiophone.
Yeah.
Now, Aditya, I believe you have some small things to say about
this. Yeah, so the Jiophone, you know, when you look at the Jiophone 2, now the biggest difference is that it has a QWERTY keyboard. Whereas the first Jiophone had like a alphanumeric keypad, which had, wherein you had to probably tap a button multiple times to get a keyword in. And the way I look at it is it's like a perfect transition between a touchscreen and a feature phone. So it's like the next step from the Jiophone. And that's why like the newer number makes more sense to me. And the bigger screen, yeah, it had to come in because you have Facebook and YouTube. And we all know what happened to YouTube after Jio came to India. Like you have like countless amount of view bumps or whatever.
But most of them were actually on smartphone devices. So that's
another thing. So this is probably to get people using feature phones to, you know, kind of experience the same thing. Or probably a second bump to YouTube views.
Yeah, so
probably.
what we do know, and this is something we've heard from multiple developers who have worked on, who are working with Jio to create games and apps for their app store, is that, a lot of them have their games and apps easily sitting at 100,000, 150,000 users. And a phone like this will essentially, as Aditya said, expand their reach in the feature phone space. I do agree with that. It seems to be more like a business play and a play to, you know, show people that, yes, there's something fresh on a yearly basis to get that audience to keep coming back. Now, what's also interesting is that, at least from what we've been told, according to these multiple developers we've spoken to, is that Reliance is looking to target 300 million users by 2019 on their service. And I think right now there are 220 million. So yeah, new hardware does get people to pick up or pay attention to you, even though the differences are just superficial. It would make a difference. It's the same reason why, you know, a ton of Android manufacturers went with a notch, because that made their phone stand out. The spec might be the same. The spec might not be even that great, but the fact that it looks different is good enough to push people forward. So to me, it just seems like one in many steps Reliance is taking to ensure that users keep coming back and they still stay relevant.
Yeah, a few points I want to make here. So first is what Aditya mentioned earlier. It's that YouTube got a massive bump in terms of users, I think, after Jio came along in India, because of two simple reasons. One is Reliance Jio, the telecom operator, brought down the prices of mobile data in India significantly. Exactly. So I used to pay around 1,299 rupees, excluding taxes, to get 20 GB of data a month. Now I get the exact same thing for 299 rupees.
Yeah.
So
because I remember telling Pranay, because we keep checking the Vodafone app pretty often, and I started off by paying probably 499 rupees for 10 GB a month recently.
Yeah.
And now the same pack is available for 299. Yeah. And that is something, you know,
299, you get 20 GB.
20 GB with data rollover as well.
And this is like in the last 3 months or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before that, before Jio came along, we used to pay 12.99, 16.99, yeah, ridiculous prices for like really small data.
Prepaid, packs. And I remember paying like 297 for 1 GB of data.
Yeah, exactly. And so yeah, now you get 20 GB in that exact same price.
Yeah.
So that is what has sort of driven up the usage of internet in India. It has also driven up internet speeds, even though India remains one of the markets where the internet speeds are among the lowest in the entire world. Yeah, but all of that aside, what did happen is that Jio brought down the prices of data and more people started going online and using these services such as YouTube and Facebook and WhatsApp. Now that sort of ties into the fact that YouTube, WhatsApp and Facebook, all three apps, are now available on KaiOS, which is what powers the JioPhone 2 and the JioPhone. Yeah, and finally, I would also like to call to your attention the fact that Google has invested around $22 million in KaiOS. So it's a strategic investment, I guess, because they have seen the number of users that JioPhone has, which is significant, even though, you know, we have not seen that many JioPhones out there in our daily commutes and, you know, when we're out and about.
Yeah, Pranay, while you're completely right on that, on the fact that we're not seeing it in our day-to-day, but at least according to what we've heard, we've had several developers on the podcast in the past who said that thanks to Jio, we've had 2x the number of users on the same app. So if whoever was making money prior is still making more money now because of Jio. I think Rishi Oberoi said that on a podcast with us when we discussed BioShock.
Link in the show notes.
Exactly. And we also did have another developer, Vaibhav Chavan, talking to us on Talk About Games, which was our gaming show, where he said that, they're looking at 100,000, 150,000 daily active on Jio alone.
Link in the show notes.
Exactly. So point is, and that's the thing, right? If you look at it from a pure numbers play, it seems to be huge. But again, if everyone's looking at the same things or watching the same or playing the same games, looking at the same apps, consuming the same content, it kind of lays waste to the idea of a long tail, to the fact that you get greater variety on the internet, because discoverability is still a problem. You still have developers making good stuff which no one can find. You still have content that's yet to be discovered. And it'll be fascinating to see how things get worked out. Because if I'm not mistaken, on the Jio App Store, one of the most popular apps is Chota Bheem. I mean, it's a licensed game. Everyone knows about that. And that's what's doing. So in a way, and if you also look at it and contrast it to initiatives from Google, wherein the idea is to get developers to make new stuff and, you know, help them, mentor them to make good stuff. This is, I mean, while that's nice in theory, the actual reality is, the fact is, consumption seems to be homogeneous across the board. So it'll be fun to see how this pans out on phase two of Jio.
Yeah, so what I'm worried about is that, like, already we've seen this on iOS and Android, which is the top 10 most used apps. I think Google and Facebook have about like 6 or 7 of them.
Exactly. This is according to an App Annie report, which is also on our site. I think we'll have links in the show notes.
Yeah.
But that's a thing. It seems to be, usage seems to be unified across the board.
Yeah. So the more we the more people we get on board, the more people we get online, the worse the internet is seeming to get, because who wants an internet where like only 2 or 3 companies control everything you see? Mm-hmm. And for many people, as like studies have revealed earlier, for many people in developing nations, such as India and Indonesia, the internet is pretty much Facebook. Yeah. And nothing else. WhatsApp is the internet for them. Like, they don't know anything else about the internet except for, you know, apps owned by these companies.
But then if you look at companies that are looking to make a monopoly, the easiest way for them to is, you know, bring people onto their platform and give them only stuff that they make. And that is effectively what's happening here, because on KaiOS, you only have support for WhatsApp, Facebook, and YouTube. And
don't forget all the Jio suite of apps, okay?
Yeah, Jio Chat. Again, and the Jio basically every app that Reliance Jio makes. So that'll again depend. So you with the Jiophone 2, people buying it or using the Jiophone and the 2, these are people who could only afford feature phones. And you will see an app like basically them using a lot of Facebook, WhatsApp. And that's where the next big bump for numbers is coming for these main companies. So for them, I think that's what they're looking at.
I think that's one way of looking at it. And the other thing, though, is that all of these come with their own app store, with the Jio app store, if I'm not mistaken. And over there, it would be interesting to see, because we haven't looked at the phone for a while. We haven't looked at a Jio phone for a while. So it'd be interesting to see what kind of curation or efforts they're making in terms of discoverability. But there seems to be a large content pipeline. They seem to be pushing it. From the conversations I've had with multiple app creators, is that Reliance wants to, at least the intent is there to at least try to push the network or create something where you have a million concurrent users playing at any given time, which is tremendous. It sounds great on paper, but how it pans out yet to be seen.
So when is Asphalt 9 coming to Jiophone?
Good question. I think we'll have to ask Gameloft that. But point is, at least the intent seems to be there. And also what's interesting is that none of the apps on the Jio store have any microtransactions. Everything's ad driven. The revenue is ad driven, and the revenue comes from Jio's own network. So long story in addition to this, the revenue split is variable depending on developer to developer. So we could be, I feel that while right now the consumption seems to be super homogeneous, where you have a situation where, as Aditya said, it looks like it could be a monopoly, but I also, there is some hope that we might just see something come different out of these constraints, maybe something local, something native, something which people could actually, you know, care about, end up being going viral, who knows, could happen. But then that aside, coming back to the phone itself, I find it interesting that we see there doesn't seem to be an internal spec bump, and that they've actually opted for a similar set of components internally as well. But who knows? We've seen this in the past also, where earlier units of the Jio phone had a different processor, had different internal spec before what we finally saw. Who knows? We made that could just happen here as well.
Yeah, but it's a bit unlikely considering that it's 5th of July, and I think Jio phone bookings start on 15th of August.
Yep.
So it's just like just over a month to go. So it's a little unlikely that they'll change a critical hardware component in this time, because I think I don't understand that much about manufacturing, but what little I do know, it tells me that a lot of pricing is dependent on volume.
Yep.
So if you are planning to ship something in that much volume, by now everything should be locked down and you should have your orders placed and everything should be in manufacturing. Otherwise, you will not be able to ship it like in the timeline that is mentioned. Mm-hmm. I think 2 to 3 months is the turnover time for like a large scale manufacturing operation to commence.
For something of this magnitude, yes. But what's also interesting is that both phones have something similar with LG and Samsung, where there's a dedicated button for voice assistant. and we're yet to see. I mean, I don't know. Has anyone seen that pickup? Is that something people are actually using on a feature phone?
So you know what? Like, first, I'll just ask Aditya one thing about the original Jio phone, which is, if you remember using the Google Assistant on that.
Yeah.
Okay, how much time did it take for you to fire up the Google Assistant?
It does take time. It's not as fast as shown in the demos.
So the demo on stage, like even last year and this year, it makes it look like these guys press the button and immediately Google Assistant is fired up and they're asking questions and it responds immediately. It is never going to happen, especially not on Jio's network in its current state in most places, because
on a few Android phones also it takes a little longer than that.
Yeah, exactly. And also Google takes time to understand what you're saying and reply to you. Like, you know, even if you're using the Google Pixel 2, it's not going to be this fast as they showed it on stage. So the demo was obviously fake. I mean, don't get too carried away by all of that. But what is important here is that, yeah, it works. Yeah, even though it may not be as seamless an experience. So the bigger thing here, for me at least, is that now there are several companies which have tried to go their own way in terms of building a platform. All right, we've already seen a bunch of these efforts, such as there was that Sailfish OS by Yola. Yeah, that's how you pronounce it. Or Jola.
Yola
OS,
I guess.
If you want to be Indian. Then there is Samsung with its Tizen efforts, which have not really gone anywhere so far. And now there is Jio. So Jio is pushing Kai OS really hard. It's not a platform that Jio has designed, but it seems to be adopting this for its Jio phone line of products. Now, let's remind everyone that there was a life range of phones from the same company, I think, which didn't really go anywhere. Those phones were mediocre, didn't perform very well in the test that we were able to run on a couple of these units. And also even their most expensive phones, which cost as much as 60,000 rupees, let's just say that they were nowhere near the current flagships that top companies are putting out, right? So the Life line of products was not too well received. Now the Jio phone was very well received. Jio phone 2, will also probably be very well received, as long as the phone has like a decent level of functionality and doesn't sort of, you know, explode like the Note 7. So the important thing here is that the Jio phone 2 costs 3,000 rupees. Jio phone 1 costs 1,500 rupees. These are price segments that Android has not been able to penetrate. And that, I think, is the heart of why Reliance's Jio is pushing this so hard. I think if Google and the likes and Reliance and all these people want to reach the next billion, as they keep saying, they have to be able to breach that price point. Yeah. Right now, Android phones under the 5,000 rupee price bracket are really not worth buying. They're really bad. And the Jio phone, while it's not great, it does offer a pretty decent level of performance for the price.
And it kind of gives people what they want. They want WhatsApp, they want Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah, and if you compare it to stuff like the Nokia 3310 Classic, that phone costs 3,310 rupees and does not really deliver value for money. Yeah. It doesn't even have 4G. So if you look at all of that, and then if you look at 1,500 rupees for Jio phone and 3,000 for Jio phone 2, yeah, there is actually value to be had here. And I am guessing that the next product in line, as you mentioned, Shenoy, is that probably, you know, a Kai OS touchscreen phone.
Yeah,
I don't think they will be pushing Android from here on, because Kai OS gives them more control over how things pan out. And if they were able to get companies such as Google and Facebook to develop a version of their app just for this phone, then it shows that, you know, it's not like those companies are taking these guys lightly. Remember that WhatsApp has already discontinued its app for like Symbian phones and even BlackBerry. They keep extending it by a month or two, but the writing is on the wall. If it's not gone already, it will go very soon. But if they're building it for a new platform, that means, you know, these companies are not taking the power of this Kai OS with Reliance Jio lightly. So that's something to keep an eye out on.
I think a lot of it also has to do with install base. Has Reliance said if they're going to continue selling the first Jio phone alongside the Jio phone 2?
Yes, so that brings me to another interesting thing. Now, not only are they going to continue selling the Jio phone 1, they are also giving some kind of an offer. They're calling it the Monsoon Hangama offer, where if you trade in your old feature phone, you get 1,000 rupees off on the Jio phone.
Wow.
Which is essentially you getting a phone at 500 rupees. It's all fine and dandy, but once again, my suspicion is that the whole point of the hardware device is to get you locked into the Jio ecosystem.
Yeah.
They want you using JioChat, they want you using JioCinema, they want you using the Kai OS platform that is there on JioPhone and to get locked into it. And they want you on the Jio network. They don't want you out of these things. But, you know, how effective this will prove to be in the long run, that, you know, obviously remains to be seen. in the short term, at least the strategy looks like it is something that is going to, you know, win in the near term, if we may make that prediction. Yeah. But beyond that, I think we can safely conclude that the Jiophone 2 is a stopgap and there is more to come from this company, but right now they are not ready to, I don't think the hardware is there and they are probably not able to get the pricing down to low enough levels to launch these things. However, there was one more announcement at Reliance's AGM, which was also held today. It's Jio GigaFiber. Now, GigaFiber is Reliance Jio's broadband initiative, fixed line wired internet to your house for Wi-Fi at your home. Important thing, once again, is that they have not announced the pricing. Yeah, they have only given you some important details, like it will be available for registration on August 15th. If you get your neighbors to register, if you register, more people register from your area, your building, then you will get it first. So why is Reliance doing this? Again, my suspicion is that it's because of the way the broadband laws are structured in India. How it works in most places in India, at least in Mumbai where I live, is that these rights are negotiated on a building by building, on a society by society basis. So a cable operator can come to your society and say that I will give you internet here. I will pay you some money for exclusivity towards the society. Society will accept that agreement and there will be only one provider in your society. You will not be able to get internet from any other player. And Jio, to change that, I think they have been lobbying with the Telecom Regulatory Authority of India. They have been trying to get this changed, but so far I don't think they have made much headway. So now if you say that you are very interested and you get your entire building to say that you are interested in Jio Fiber, which claims to offer gigabit speeds, which is 1 Gbps, well, maybe Reliance will be able to make a stronger case with Try and get that law changed, and that will obviously be a huge kick in the teeth for all the people who've like invested that much money in acquiring customers. But this is how competition works. I mean, laws change and you can't like, even if with somebody with the might of Reliance Jio, you can't expect them to sit back and relax while you enjoy your monopoly.
Yeah. No, but I think there's more to, you know, Giga Fiber bit as well, because this is again a fiber optic cable that will have to be, you know, roads will need to be dug up to get it from the nearest node to your building. And that is why Reliance wants a lot of people to go in for it, because the cost of installation is going to be high and for them to recover it, it's not going to be easy. At the same time, when it comes to societies, if you have a lot of people, you know, basically opting for the same service, they can use your society as a node for further connections. So that is kind of, it helps them. And it's kind of an incentive telling that, okay, if you have a lot of people registering for, you know, the Jio Fiber from your society, that you know, you'll be given a higher priority. And when it comes to societies and all, getting permissions to, you know, pretty much dig the society premises to draw a fiber optic cable, well, that will need some time. And if you have a lot of members from the society who are pro for the entire process, it will make it easier for Reliance to go ahead with installation and everything else. So that is kind of playing in the background as well.
Yeah, so what they did not announce is pricing for their plans and what speeds they are offering. They did mention the gigabit term, but it does not mean much, honestly. Like, you could be offering 1 Gbps with like a data cap of 1 GB. So, you know, I know Reliance Jio will probably not do that, but still, I would have liked to see some concrete information on what internet plans they're offering and at least something to get people interested. I mean, I'm not going to see the name Jio and then suddenly, you know, fall in love with the entire company and call them and tell them, please install it in my society. I really want you to come in here.
No, but honestly, you know, with the announcement of Jio Fiber, the one thing I'm looking forward to is waiting for my cable operator to drop prices on my internet plan.
Exactly. I think that's what's going to happen. And more importantly, while they're stressing on 1 gigabyte, on 1 gigabit speeds and all that, there is, I mean, let's be honest, with most other providers, be it Hathaway, be it Airtel, providing speeds up to 50 Mbps, will 1 gigabit really make a difference? I mean, for most people, I frankly don't think that's the case.
But Rishi, you have an Xbox One X. It will make a world of a difference.
I was just getting to that. There are exceptions to the rule, like myself, and gamers in particular, because file sizes are crazy, updates are crazy. I think on a monthly basis, I go through a terabyte worth of data alone. So yeah, I do see use cases for this. But for most people, it seems like overkill. But what's interesting, though, is they finally talked about the worst kept secret, which is the Giga TV set-top box. It's been known, according to our sources, through many names over the years internally as the Jio Android box, the Jio Android set-top box, the Jio console. And there were hints that they were probably going to, you know, shelve the project altogether when it was noticed that there was an NVIDIA Streaming Shield device at one of Jio's events a year and a half ago or so. But that doesn't seem to be the case. They seem to be going forward with their own tech. According to people who we know who've seen early iterations of this set-top box, it runs a custom UI, Jio's own skin, along with all the with all their apps baked in. So Jio Money, Jio App Store and the like. And they do plan to have a pipeline of content, at least from a game standpoint. So expect EA titles to be there and other stuff from other Android game makers. There was also a controller which I've been told about, which is also going to be a part of the package. But we don't know if that's actually going to be the case, because this has been in development for a very long time, since I think the days when the Ouya was relevant.
I mean, you know, brownie points to anybody who even remembers what the Ouya is.
Yeah, Android micro console.
Yeah,
Kickstarter, back in the day when Android was awesome.
Yeah, and back in the day when people used to get excited by looking at Kickstarter projects.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, so moving on from GigaFiber, which is exciting, but at the moment, wafers and non-details. Asus Zenfone 5Z. This is the part of the podcast where we abandon talking about Reliance Jio and lean into mobile phones, once again, which is our forte. So, specialist, Aditya Shenoy is here. Now, let me introduce this phone very quickly. It is a OnePlus 6 Killer. There you go. So,
That is what Asus is saying as well, because you look at their the launch event and they're comparing it with the OnePlus 6. They're saying that, okay, this is what it does better than the OnePlus 6. And when you look at the hardware, it is powered by the same Snapdragon 845 SoC.
Yeah. And
When you look at the pricing, you're like, oh, that's money saved. So for those who don't know, the Zenfone 5Z is priced at 29,999 rupees. And whereas an equally spec'd OnePlus 6 will cost you 34,999 rupees. So there's a difference of about 5,000 rupees. And that is what, generates a lot of interest for the Zenfone 5Z.
Yeah, exactly. So beyond the pricing though, I mean, I did say it's a OnePlus 6 killer, but I was joking. you know, a lot depends on certain aspects of the phone, how the software is designed, whether it actually performs. See, what I noticed is that in the with the Zenfone Max Pro M1, which was another phone where Asus's pricing was really aggressive.
Yeah.
They priced it around 11,000 rupees. And it was so good that it could take on the Redmi Note 5 Pro in terms of performance. But we did notice that the battery life, even though it had a 5,000 milliampere hour battery, did not live up to the mark. It wasn't up to expectations at all. Like, the optimization was sorely lacking.
Yeah.
So, does the Asus Zenfone 5Z, does it have any similar issues that you noticed?
So, when testing it, I was also comparing it with the benchmarks and the scores that the OnePlus 6 had. And when it comes to battery capacity, both the phones have 3,300 milliamp hour batteries. And in our HD video loop test that we run on all phones that we test, the OnePlus 6 had a time of 10 hours and 59 minutes, whereas the Zenfone 5Z had 10 hours and 42 minutes. So it's in the same range. And what is kind of interesting is that the 5Z has, when it comes to software, ZenUI, it's toned down compared to what it was. Like, the bloat has gone down significantly, but you have Facebook, Instagram and Messenger pre-installed, and you can only disable it, not uninstall it.
Yeah, but that's something even Samsung does.
Yeah, so like, you know, it's not like a stock Android approach that they've taken with the Zenfone Max Pro M1.
Mm-hmm.
So it still has ZenUI. And one interesting bit is the amount of AI features that this phone comes with that the OnePlus 6 does not have.
Yeah, so the, like, before you proceed with that, I would just like to remind our listeners that Asus had been using the term AI much before, like, it became a mainstream term thanks to Google advancing its AI in its smartphones, and, you know, even to some extent embedding it in some hardware level as well on certain phones. Asus, when it says AI, like, it does not mean the exact same thing as when Google says it is AI, as Aditya will tell you, I'm sure.
Yeah, so when it comes to features, not all the features that the Zenfone 5Z has uses actual AI, which is deep learning and artificial intelligence, machine learning and artificial intelligence. So it will take some of it is pretty much it figures out, okay, it has like a set rules which it goes and checks, and it's not dynamic. So like the AI ringtone volume. So it has a feature wherein if you have the volume set at maximum and you are sitting in a silent room, it won't go off at full volume. It will start at a lower volume and gradually increase. Whereas on most other phones, it will you'll probably have a panic attack, you know, trying to mute your phone.
Yeah, especially if the phone is made by a Chinese manufacturer who tend to somehow have these speakers available. You know, they're louder than some Bluetooth speakers in the market. Yeah. So, yeah.
So that's there. Now, this does not, because it uses the same kind of logic, wherein if it's silent, okay, start from a low volume and increase it. It does not manage the volume dynamically.
Wait, so that would mean the phone's actually listening at every time, point in time.
Well, that is the only way it kind of figures out, I guess.
I'm pretty sure this kind of a technology does not actually require the phone to listen into everything you're saying, because you know by that logic the ambient light sensor also should not work without like looking at the environment constantly, right? I think it's a sensor which detects what the volume in the surroundings
is. When it has an incoming call coming in, that is when it kind of activates the microphones to check if.
Yeah, exactly. So it's probably just has some kind of a sensor to measure the noise level. But although every time I see this kind of a feature which promises convenience, you know, I immediately start worrying about privacy, just as you know Rishi said.
So essentially, it's not AI, but more like intelligent sensors.
It uses the microphones on the phone. Like it does not have a separate sensor that's kind of sucking the battery out. But it's microphones that's already built in, and when the software kind of determines if it needs to play the volume at a full blast or, you know, tone it down a little.
Yeah, exactly. And also, based on what you've told me so far before we recorded the podcast, the charging feature also looked pretty interesting to me.
So that was one feature that I found to be interesting. They've kind of broken it down into two parts. One is AI charging and the second is scheduled charging. So it kind of helps to preserve your battery. So what AI charging does is, if you have a habit of plugging your smartphone in on charge at night and unplugging it early in the morning, what will happen is the phone will charge all the way up to 100% and then keep trickle charging till you unplug the phone from the charger. Now, what AI charging does is that it monitors your behavior for a week, 2 weeks, and figures out when you plug the phone in to charge and when you disconnect it. So once the phone is plugged in, it'll keep charging it till 80% and then hold that charge all the way till the time you'd unplug it. So 2 hours before you unplug the phone, it'll start charging from 80% again all the way up to full charge. So say if you unplug your phone every morning around 7 o'clock, when you unplug the Zenfone 5Z at 7, it will be at 100% charge, while throughout the night it will be somewhere around 80% hovering. So this kind of helps the phone to preserve battery life, because otherwise with trickle charging you lose battery cycles constantly because the phone is constantly charging and discharging.
When Aditya is mentioning battery life, he means the life of the battery. Not the amount of charge it is holding right now. So if you notice you buy a phone today, a year down the line it just doesn't have the same level of battery life, because lithium ion batteries, that's how they work.
Battery health would be a better
term. Battery health, so due to wear their capacity degrades over time, this tries to preserve it. But at the same time, I do worry that, you know, because of trickle charging, if on one day suddenly I get a call, there is, you know, an event at 6 a.m. which I've forgotten about, and at 4 a.m. I have to leave home.
So that's the thing. Yeah. So the phone charges it to 80%. So that's the best thing, because you'll still have 80% of charge. So, and 80% takes about an hour to get the phone from zero charging. So it has an 18-watt charger in the box. So when you plug it in, it will hit 80% somewhere around an hour, 10 minutes probably.
So while it seems that they're using AI, or rather an intelligent charging in a pretty cool way, are they even using what they deem as AI for better photos? Because that seems to be the usual use case with most other.
Yeah, so AI is kind of expected in flagships now. The Zenfone 5Z has AI scene detection, wherein it can identify what the camera is pointed towards. So you point it at a cat, it will kind of set the camera up as well in order to click a photo of a cat, plants, greenery, even night mode. So it automatically switches to night mode view and kind of increases the shutter speed so that, you know, you can get a good photo.
Okay. So beyond that, I think since you mentioned the camera, how does it compare against the OnePlus 6? Do we have any idea?
So we have a comparison going on soon. It'll be up on the site very soon. But from what I've been checking, it edges past the OnePlus 6.
That's pretty heartening to hear. But even though, I mean, most people would probably be confused between both phones when they see them from the front because they look identical.
Yeah, so both the phones have a notch. I think both have 6-inch plus displays. The 5Z has a 6.2-inch display, and this is a super IPS plus panel.
Oh, so it's using an IPS panel, yeah, and not OLED.
No.
So that means
OLED.
You can't have an always-on display like you would on the
OnePlus.
You'll
be draining battery.
All right.
Like, you can probably have it, but you will be draining battery. Mm-hmm. It's kind of pointless.
Yeah, but still, this sort of a thing kind of makes me wonder if Asus is actually taking a loss while selling the phone, or if their margin is so thin that they will only be able to make money if they sell it in big volumes.
I think
Asus can answer that better. But
yeah.
No, but I mean, if we look at their history as a company and how they've operated in other fields, I mean, they've done something similar with their laptop lineup. If you notice, the non-ROG Republic of Gamer laptops are sold at competitive prices versus what you'd be paying for Dell or HP. And I think that seems to be their approach, where, you know, get in, get the awareness, and it works out from there. They did something similar with ROG in India also, where they were priced, I think, 5-10K less at the start versus HP Dell and the rest of them. And that kind of worked for them because according to people we've spoken to, they're, I think, number two or number three in the laptop space, at least when it comes to gaming category.
Yeah.
So point is, it just seems to be a standard strategy for them. Come in at a low price, get people hooked and take life from there. And it's not even new for the phone space in particular. If anyone remembers the Xiaomi Mi 3. Yeah, flagship at 15,000.
Yeah.
Or 13,000.
Or if anyone remembers the OnePlus One.
There we go.
Yeah.
So it just seems to be that approach. And it's well-worn territory. It's there is a playbook for it. And that's something which we've seen manufacturers use. Some of them have done it really well, like OnePlus, where they've steadily been able to increase the price without too much of fallout. Then we've seen Xiaomi use it to evolve their strategy, where it's not flagships, it's mid-end, low-end.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what path Asus takes.
Yeah.
Because
this is like the second phone that Asus has made. Like, the Zenfone Max Pro M1 is the first, and this is the second. And the interesting bit here is that if you look at Xiaomi, so they brought in a flagship phone for a really low price, and then they went on with the Redmi series, which is a budget-oriented series. And then now you've seen that Xiaomi is finding it really hard to break out of that mold, wherein their flagship phones, you know, it's not seeing that kind of volume. Like, it does not have the buzz around it. Whereas Asus, I think, we've kind of jumped to the flagship series very quickly. And in all probability, they might be running two different series. Probably one,
possibly, yeah,
like the Max Pro M1, which caters to the budget audience.
Yeah, although, like,
flagship.
I would probably maybe say that the Zenfone 5Z is not exactly a flagship phone. I probably would call it a mid-range phone. Yeah, while the OnePlus 6 also, it claims to be a flagship now. It costs 35,000 and all. There are certain things that the phone lacks, such as it is not waterproof and dustproof, in the sense that it is not IP rated, which is probably the standard for this. It also doesn't have wireless charging. So it's not like the phone is a complete package, even if you get most of the features at 2/3 of the price. So there's still like a gap between these phones and the actual flagships in the smartphone market.
I agree completely, but their counter argument to all this is that we're charging 2/3.
Yeah.
So for them,
it's flagship grade hardware, like the Snapdragon, like the processors and all are all flagship
grade.
But
then here's the other thing though, and in fact, I do agree with Pranay's point. But then here's the other thing as well, right? It might be it's basically the same mentality we're seeing across the smartphone industry, where good enough is the best option for a lot of manufacturers. We've seen this with Motorola on mid-range. We've seen this with Xiaomi on mid-range. And it just seems that that kind of mentality has percolated to the high end as well. And in a way, you can't blame them, because if you look at the prices, right? I mean, for most people, do you see people spending upwards of a lakh for an iPhone? Sure, it has an audience. But beyond that, there are a lot of people who'd rather spend a third of that and pick up something else. So but I do think that because of the lack of these critical features like waterproofing or the fact that you don't have wireless charging, it deserves a different nomenclature altogether. And I think it's something that should be an industry standard at this stage.
Yeah,
true. I propose budget flagship.
or just call the high-end ultra flagship and let this be flagship.
Yeah, so before we round up this episode, like Aditya, I would like you to talk about some of the other things in this smartphone. Like, in terms of performance, have you noticed any issues? You played games on it. Did you notice any problems? Is the display quality good? Any other things that people need to know about front camera or battery life overall?
So, first of all, the display. The display is good on it. Like, it's got very punchy colors. It has a DCI-P3 color gamut. So, it's a very good display. And on top of it, this phone has a color temperature sensor that's positioned on the back. Right where the flash is. So what it does is it sets the color temperature of the display based on the ambient surrounding. So you can, you know, if you are in probably like incandescent lights, it will keep the display towards a slightly lighter tone, like a brighter bluish tone. Whereas if you go towards probably, you know, a yellow lighting environment or something, you can see that shift in the display. And it is pleasing on the eye as well. That is good. When it comes to the cameras, like, looking at the trend, Asus has gone with it, so it's a dual camera setup at the back, and this time it is a primary 12 megapixel camera and a secondary wide angle, like a secondary 8 megapixel camera with a wide angle lens. So wide angle kind of is helpful when you want to have like a wider frame without having to move back, like, you know, when you're clicking landscape and stuff, the wide angle camera is really helpful. Selfies, it clicks good selfies, 8 megapixel selfie camera, good selfie. There's no selfie flash, but it has a screen flash which is just about bright enough to illuminate your face. Your background and all won't be illuminated with the screen flash, but yeah, it will give you decent selfies. One interesting point is that the phone can record 4K video at 60 fps, and there's no time limit. So
yeah, so unlike the OnePlus 6.
So there's no time limit.
But it does get hot after.
Exactly.
Yeah, it does get.
What's the thermal management on that?
So the thing is, if you're I was playing PUBG yesterday, and probably after 10-15 minutes, the phone does not get warm. Like the 845 is known to be a good with thermals, and it does manage it well. But when you record 4K at 60, boy, it gets hot after 10 minutes. I haven't seen it shutting down till about 15 minutes, 30 seconds. After that, I kind of gave up because, you know, the file size was somewhere around 8 gigs on a phone which has like 64 GB of internal storage. I didn't have the heart to keep abusing the phone.
That's a very disturbing pairing. Why would you want to have 4K recording on a 64 gig device?
So the thing is, you get the 5G in multiple variants. So you have the basic variant, which is priced at 29999, is 6 GB of RAM and 64 GB of internal storage. The second one is 6 GB of RAM and 128 GB of internal storage, which is priced at 32999. And the last one is 8 gigs of RAM with 256 GB of internal storage. It's like the highest storage variant available. And that's priced at 36999.
Yeah, so even that's cheaper than the OnePlus 6, whose 8 GB, 128 GB variant is, I think, at 39999.
Yeah, so they seem to be offering more value on paper.
And there's one more thing.
What?
It has a hybrid SIM slot, so you can use a SD card to expand storage.
But then here's the other question. That seems all fine from a hardware spec standpoint. But is it using stock Android?
No, it does not use stock Android. It has like Zen UI on top. But it's like when I talk about stock Android, well, it functions like stock Android. You have additions on top of it. Like you have theme support. So you have themes built in. Then Asus has put in an audio manager. And for audio files, the phone is Hi-Res certified. And it also has Hi-Res headphones included in the box, which is it's kind of unseen at this price point. Most smartphones now do not ship with headphones. Like you mostly have like,
so
you
does
have
Asus make these headphones or someone else?
So there's like Zenfone, Hi-Res, like it's a Hi-Res headphone, and it does have good audio quality. And even the speaker, when you're listening to the audio on the phone, it uses a dual speaker. So it uses your earpiece as the secondary speaker and a bottom firing speaker. And
yeah, that's
it does get
pretty like standard. Yeah.
Interesting.
All right. So, you know, like from whatever you told me so far, it seems like this phone is heaven on earth and paradise and all that. But what's wrong with this? Like, what are the cons of this phone?
Yeah, when it comes to cons and stuff, first of all, timeline when it comes to Android updates. Like a lot of people, you launch phones with the latest version of Android and then kind of forget about it. Now, OnePlus has recently kind of given a schedule of sorts.
This isn't a part of Android One?
No. This is not a part of Android One. Like, the only flagship I can think of which is a part of Android One is probably the Nokia 8 Sirocco.
Exactly.
Google Pixel.
And yeah, Google Pixel is like
Project Trouble,
Or Project Trouble. But yeah.
So updates are unknown at this point.
At this point, and apart from that, software support. Because what we've seen with the Zenfone Max Pro M1, thank God I got the name right again. Is that we've
name
seen
in the show notes.
We've seen changes in performance, like the battery life and everything. Because when we've compared it with other phones, we've seen like minor differences when it comes to benchmark scores and stuff. And if I'm not wrong, it's gone like 5 updates for multiple things. So you know, it all depends if Asus gets it right for the Zenfone 5Z. Apart from that, when it comes to pricing, availability might be an issue because the Zenfone, the Max Pro M1 is not available most of the time. You'll see it out of stock. And it's a good phone on paper, value for money, but you can't buy it. So it's kind of useless. Hmm.
So it's in a way, it's essentially like the same problem Xiaomi had back in the day.
Yeah. So this phone, I think availability, if Asus has, you know, the units in store to ship to meet demand, only then it will be available on open sale. Otherwise, you can expect stockouts.
Have they said that it's going to be a flash sale or an open sale?
No, from what I know, they've been saying that it's an open sale. It'll be on open sale.
Yeah, but then it obviously like depends on the number of units they get in. Yeah. So we should mention that OnePlus 6, at least availability wise, hasn't had any issues that we know of. It's probably been in stock throughout, except you want certain color variants, which you know, may not always be easily available.
Yeah, but if I'm not mistaken, isn't this phone exclusive to any one of the e-commerce?
Flipkart.
There you go. I think
so
that
exclusive
also
exclusive to Flipkart.
I think that also would explain the price. Because if you think about, because usually what we've seen in the past, at least with OnePlus and Xiaomi, when they were exclusive to a specific retailer, they had better price control, and we've seen that even with OnePlus back in the day. So I think it's a question of, okay, lower price, but supply is going to be a concern. And who knows,
I think
that
it probably
the...
has to do something with Flipkart, you know, willing to stock that amount or, you know,
exactly.
guaranteeing sales
exactly.
of that amount,
exactly.
which kind of encourages the company to go for an aggressive price because it's, again,
exactly.
you know,
volumes
will
yeah.
help.
Yeah, because if
get
I'm not
the
mistaken,
price
with at least back in the day when Flipkart did this for the very first time, I think with the Moto G, the day one quantity was I think around 1.5 lakh units. So, yeah, I mean, obviously this is a high-end phone. I mean,
probably
marketed
will get
as
in
a
lower
much
quantity.
Lower than
yeah.
that, much lower than that.
Yeah.
So it'd be fun to see how this pans out. But I think the reason why it's priced so low is because of the fact that it's at one retailer. Because the moment you expand and go to multiple retailers, your cost of distribution also increase. You need middlemen, and there are other things that you have to take in.
Yeah, now essentially yeah. just send it to Flipkart's warehouses and you're done, right?
Yeah,
yeah. And yeah. hopefully yeah. things go well.
And we've seen for Xiaomi as well, when they went with the offline market, you have
yeah.
seen like offline prices are higher.
So, yep. yeah. yeah. All right. So 3 months ago, I think on this podcast, I said that the 20,000 to 30,000 rupee price point in Android is a big weak point. no real good phones available there.
Yeah.
Since then, we've had the launch of the Vivo V9, the Oppo F7. Thank God I didn't confuse those
yeah.
two. I always call it the Vivo F7 and the Oppo V9. Then we had the Nokia 7 Plus coming in. And now we have the Asus Zenfone 5Z. So there you go. That segment has sort of been taken care of, with probably more companies targeting it as well. So yeah, if you like, if you're not happy with what you get with a budget phone under 20,000 rupees, there's a very good, like, bunch of very good options for you. You know, slightly higher price range as well. That gap has sort of been filled. So I think that's all we have for this episode of Orbital, unless Rishi wants to say something.
I don't know. I mean, the only the gap has always been filled. You just buy an iPhone a generation late.
Or three generations
three
late,
generations
yeah,
late.
And even then you pay over 30,000. You know, the iPhone 6s is currently selling at 35,000,
which is overpriced.
A travesty, but whatever.
Overpriced.
They're
it's
optimizing
overpriced.
It in iOS 12, so everything is going to be fine, you know.
Not really.
At that price point, I think it probably have more support than any other phone there.
Yeah,
that's possibly true.
Yeah.
That is also true, but still it doesn't justify
yeah,
the
it doesn't justify
irrational
the price.
Pricing.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's all we have for this episode of Orbital, and we will see you with another episode next week. As always, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Gadgets360. Please do rate us on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, and subscribe to us on these apps. And you can also find us on iTunes on the Mac and, you know, whatever app you use on Windows. And as always, you can write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com to share your thoughts, your questions, your comments, and feedback. Thank you
so
much for listening.